Welcome, everybody. Thanks for weathering the monsoon and the floods out there to come to this neighboring class. Before we get started, we actually want to hear from some of you. For those of you who have been here for the last couple of weeks, what are some ways that you've been stretched or challenged? How have you maybe had an opportunity to put that into practice in these first couple of weeks with your neighbors? Yes. Yeah, we got to get a microphone over there for the recording.
Right. Okay, I had a really actually cool opportunity this week. Our apartment complex had a block party on Monday.
Yeah.
And so I went, and this lady sat down next to me, so we just struck up a conversation. And then she was like, hey, my daughter's having a tea party tomorrow. Come over. So I got to go at her house, meet one of her friends and her daughter, and she's a single mom and all of this. And I think she gets more credit for the neighboring in this instance, but it was a really neat opportunity to meet somebody. And so now we're going to try and get together once in a while and share some meals, and it'll be great.
That's great. That's awesome. Guy, you got something?
No.
Oh, okay, good. All right, yeah, we're all set. Anybody else? Michael, I can tell you, was not a good neighbor this week.
I wasn't.
He was hundreds of miles away from his neighborhood.
We did our best to just love the people that were sitting next to us on the beach. You know, we were nice to the people that were serving us at the restaurants.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
So you found a way to apply
Absolutely.
This even hundreds of miles away.
We gave a couple of the employees hugs when we were leaving.
Yeah, that's great.
They were just so wonderful.
That's going to have eternal impact.
Right? Yeah, thank
yeah.
you.
Okay. That's good. Okay, well, so last week, Michael did a great job of kind of laying a biblical and theological foundation for why love for neighbors matters, and even why love for our neighborhoods matter. We saw that it matters because it's part of how we show off who God is to the world around us. So, just by way of reminder, we learned that we want to avoid the two extremes of reducing neighboring down to just evangelism on the one hand, right? It's not just about evangelism. But on the other hand, we don't want to put such an emphasis on transforming our neighborhoods and meeting the temporal needs of our neighbors that we just neglect evangelism altogether. So we got to kind of live in that tension in neighboring. So even though seeing our neighbors come to Christ is our ultimate goal, right, we want to recognize that there's also tremendous value in just loving our neighbors as fellow human beings created in God's image. So with that foundation, today's class is going to be, as he said, a little bit more practical, as we're going to discuss ways that we can kind of apply these concepts that we've kind of laid the groundwork for in the first couple of weeks. So how do we do this? And before we get into that, I want to remind you also of another caveat that we gave you in the first class, which is that the things that we're going to talk about in today's class, these practical ideas, are not mandatory, okay? And sometimes they're not even appropriate for every Christian. You know, Jesus commanded us to love our neighbors, so that's not optional. Right, he said it was that's the second most important commandment, in fact, next to loving God with all of our heart, soul, and mind. So obedience to loving our neighbors is not optional. But even if we do that perfectly, as a perfect response to the love that God has shown us, if we do that perfectly, it's going to look different for each of us. Because you've all got different challenges, you've got different constraints, you've got different opportunities in your life. So we just want to make that clear that the things that we're going to talk about are not thou shalt, so to speak, but it's more like these are options that are available to you, and hopefully these things help get you thinking about how you can love your neighbor. So in that sense, it's best to view this class today as a menu rather than a rule book. Okay, so with that analogy, when you go into a restaurant, you don't want to eat everything on the menu, right? But it would also be a shame if you walked out of the restaurant and didn't eat anything, right? And didn't try anything on the menu. So that's our hope for today, is that you walk out of here this morning with at least one or two practical ideas that you feel like, hey, I can implement this in my neighborhood this week in order to become a better neighbor. So before we get to our menu of practical ideas, let me just revisit two kind of broad categories of neighboring that we talked about, and that's neighbor and neighborhood. So that's item number two on your outline there, is let's kind of think through this distinction, and Michael's kind of set the tone for this, but I just want to remind you of that as we get into this, because we're going to talk about practical ways to love your neighbors as individuals, and then practical ways to love your neighborhood on maybe a more structural level. So let's just talk about those categories. So a lot of times when we're thinking about loving our neighbors, we're mostly thinking about just loving on the level of the individual, right? That's what I think of. But if we stop there of just loving individuals, I think maybe we didn't fully grasp the implications of what Michael was talking about last week. So if you remember, we read Genesis 1, 27 and 28, and Michael talked about the fact that the purpose of our work and relationships is grounded in our ultimate purpose of imaging God. I'll say that again. The purpose of our work and relationships is grounded in our ultimate purpose of imaging God. So in Genesis 1, God created man in his own image, male and female, and then he commanded them to subdue the earth and have dominion over it. So in other words, there's an obligation for those of us who are God's image bearers to rule over the rest of his creation and to bring order to the world around us. So we image God, or we show off the glory of who he is when we love our neighbors as individuals, but also when we love our neighborhoods, as we're working to organize and to plan and to clean up and to just, in general, kind of bring order to the chaos that's out there. That's part of who we are as God's image bearers. And so we have, to some degree, a responsibility to do that, to have dominion over the earth, to fulfill that commandment as God's image bearers. So as we work to address structural problems in our community that get in the way of our little piece of the world operating as God intended it to, then we're exercising our authority over the rest of creation that God has given us as his image bearers. So by structural problems, we're talking about aspects of how our neighborhood functions that might be dangerous or inefficient or unattractive. Those are structural problems. So maybe there's an ugly, empty lot in your neighborhood. I don't know if anybody here watches Parks and Recreation, but they've got the big pit. You know, the whole first season is they've got this giant pit, and they're trying to fill in the pit and build a nice park. But in my neighborhood, one of the problems that is a big issue to some people is speeding through the neighborhood. A lot of people have kids out playing, you know, riding bikes in the street and stuff. So there's kind of this competition between our side of the neighborhood and another side of the neighborhood, where people have to go through our part to get to their part, and I guess they don't have kids on that other side because they come buzzing through there. So anyway, a lot of people in our neighborhood they've worked. I mean, they've gone to the police department, they've gone to the city council to try to get speed limit signs put up. One of our neighbors even in the middle of the night snuck out and put their own speed bump, like full-on speed bump, out in our neighborhood, and then they got busted for it, and they had to move it out. But those are structural problems. Those are things that we want to see those kinds of things brought to order, and there's value, and we can image God, and we can love our neighbors by being involved in those kinds of things. So when we address structural problems in our community, we're actually vindicating God's character and His principles by showing that the way that He tells us to live is actually best. So does that make sense? Okay, so summing it up then with these two broad categories, we can say this. Neighboring to the glory of God, in this sense, with these two categories, is that we can display the glory of God both as we show love to individuals and as we work for a better society. Okay, so in our class then, our love of neighbor menu is going to include both individual and structural ways to love. Love for your neighbor and love for your neighborhood. Okay, so any questions about that before we get into our neighboring menu? No questions? Must have done a good job. Okay, so let's get into the menu then. So we'll start then with building friendships with your neighbors. So this is the individual level of loving our neighbors and building those relationships. So I want to give you 7 ideas for building friendships with neighbors. Okay, and by no means is this list comprehensive. Again, it's a menu. So hopefully these things are helpful. First thing is introduce Jesus early on. So in your first interaction with a neighbor, try to get the fact that you're a Christian into that first conversation. That can be really helpful. And I don't mean that you have to share the gospel with your neighbor the very first time that you ever talk to him. It'd be great if you could do that. But just try to make sure that early on in that relationship, that they know that you intend to follow Jesus. That's a great way to kind of just let them know who you are, let them know where you're coming from as you start to establish that relationship. You might just mention the fact that, you know, you just went to church on Sunday, or share something that you learned from your Bible reading that morning, or mention that your life group meets in your house, something like that. Something to just get it in there in a non-threatening way that you love Jesus, that your life is about following Jesus, your life is about your church and serving others, and it's a good way to set that precedent. So that if your goal then is to display the glory of who God is, it really helps if the neighbors watching your life understand that you intend to represent Christ with your life. And this is going to look different depending on what neighborhood you're in. Because in some neighborhoods, in Fayetteville, just saying you're a Christian at all is going to make you stand out. I mean, just the fact that you say that you're a Christian is going to make you seem a little strange, a little different. But there's other neighborhoods that where everybody calls himself a Christian. So if you say you're a Christian, likely everybody in the neighborhood is going to say, oh yeah, me too. So in that sense, you know, maybe you want to do something that lets them know that you're actually really serious about following Jesus. You know, that you're not the type of professing Christian who just kind of says that and has that as a nice little accessory on your shelf to go along with the rest of the good things in your life, but that this is actually a pretty central part of who you are and what you believe. So in all of this is really just to say, just be authentic, right? I mean, if you're a Christian, then Christ is the central part of who you are and what you believe. So for them to be introduced to Jesus early on in your relationship really just means that they're meeting the real you. You know, if Christ is central in your life, then for you to not introduce him to people that you're forming relationships with, you would have to kind of go out of your way to do that, I would think. You would have to go out of your way to kind of hide the fact that you believe in Jesus from your neighbors once they get to know you very well at all. So just be authentic. Number two, know their stories. Know their stories, and especially, I would say, their religious stories. It's really important if you're going to build friendships that lead to gospel conversations that you know your neighbor's faith background. And, you know, this is why in the handout that we gave you in the first week, and we had that kind of worksheet on there of knowing your neighbors, this is why we had on there briefly describe their religious background or their religious viewpoint. Do they believe in God or are they an atheist? Would they identify themselves as a Christian? Were they raised in some other kind of religion? Did they grow up going to a church? Do they still go to church? You know, and I don't know if you guys have had this experience, but I usually find that people are pretty eager to share those things, especially when they find out that I go to church and that I'm a religious person from their perspective. They, in an effort to kind of find some common ground, most people will say, oh yeah, well, I go to such and such church, or oh yeah, yeah, I'm a Catholic. Like, and they say it like, hey, you know, I'm kind of like you, you know, like you're religious, I'm religious. And I usually find that people are usually willing to share that kind of stuff pretty openly. Has anybody else had experience with that? Ben, talk about it. Yeah.
Well, I just, like you said, you ask them, I like to ask them where they attend church at.
Yeah, that's a good way to get to it.
And then I say, how do you feel about that?
I like to ask them.
Yeah, take it from
where do
the
you
top.
Attend church at?
Yeah.
And then I just tell me more about it. What they like about that church, who the pastor is, how involved they are, do they have life groups that meet outside of Sunday morning?
Yeah.
And I really drill down and start asking lots of questions about it. And you can really tell really quickly if they're nominal.
Yes.
Or if it's an accessory, or if, man, they're passionate about Jesus.
Yeah.
And either way, you know, it's a good way to know your neighbor and really start to work on a relationship like you're talking about.
For sure. Thank
like you're
you.
Doing such a great job talking about.
yeah, and all that gives you context, right? When you start to get that information, that gives you context to understand their worldview, understand where they're coming from, and that's going to help you find those bridges to get to those gospel conversations. Because you kind of know where the starting point is. So if you're talking to an atheist, you know, you can't get to the death and resurrection of Christ without first establishing the fact that, okay, there's a God in heaven, you know, who created everything and who has authority over our lives. You have to start there before you can get here. But if you're talking to a Roman Catholic, you know, they already agree and accept a lot of the things that we believe about God and about Jesus. And so with them, you're just trying to make it clear that, okay, we're saved by grace through faith, and that we can't add works to that equation to earn our salvation. But you start there and move forward rather than going to a Catholic and saying, let me tell you that there's a God in heaven, and like you don't have to do that. So this is just examples of how understanding their background, understanding their belief system can kind of inform your approach to them as you're trying to navigate to gospel conversations. Okay, number three, live at peace. Live at peace. I think Romans 12 verses 17 and 18. It's not on your guide, but I think it can help. It can help guide our thinking on this point. Paul says, "Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to what you do. But give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all." So, to me, I just, when I hear that, I think that means that I need to be extremely careful when defending my rights against, you know, in a situation with my neighbor. And I think for two reasons, we need to be careful of defending our rights when we get into maybe conflicts or disagreements. First is because when you became a Christian, you actually surrendered your rights to Christ. You actually don't have any rights. 1 Corinthians 6:19 says, "You are not your own, you were bought with a price." So you belong to your master. You don't have any rights anymore anyway. Second is that enforcing your rights at someone else's expense can seriously damage their impression of Christ if they know that you're a Christian, even if you're in the right. So it's not always about right and wrong. It might be more about living at peace than it is about being right in those kinds of situations. I think there's definitely times when loving our neighbors and our neighborhoods would compel us to pursue our legal rights in certain situations. For example, you might be motivated by love for the person who could be the next victim of a crime if the perpetrator is not caught. So that's a legal issue. And just love of others that we care about who are being abused or mistreated. I mean, I think there's cause for that. But for the Christian, the motivation is always love for God and love for others, not a desire to defend our own rights. 1 Corinthians 6:19. "You are not your own. You were bought with a price." And that applies to all kinds of areas in our life. So outside of those rare circumstances where we maybe have a legal issue or we're you know, seeking to defend someone who's being abused or mistreated, I think our normal posture should be to follow Paul's encouragement from Romans 12 to live at peace with our neighbors so far as it depends on you and to act in a way that's honorable in the sight of all. Okay, number four, do good. Do good things. Proverbs 3:27 says, "Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it." I like that verse. When it's in your power to do it. Sometimes it's not in your power to do something, but a lot of times it is. And I think when you can do something to help your neighbor, consider Proverbs 3:27 as a motivator to do that. I hope that for all of us, I hope that our neighbors would view us not just as someone who's serious about our faith in Jesus, but somebody that's serious about our efforts to be kind to them and to help and to do good. Okay, number five. So a lot of doing number four, doing good things, depends on two things that I think is pretty rare for us in this day and age, and that's time and margin. Time and margin. So number five is give them time. Let's talk about time first. So in order to build friendships with your neighbors, you're going to want to have them over for dinner. You're going to want to have a block party. Just stop on the sidewalk to have a conversation. Get lunch. Have their kids over. Go for a walk together. The ideas are endless of things that you can do. to build friendships with your neighbors, but they all have one thing in common. And that's time, right? It takes time to do those things. And time is something that you only have a finite amount of. So when you consider all the different opportunities that you have in front of you to serve Christ, you have your work, you're serving Christ at in your home, with your extended family, in the church, in your neighborhood. There's endless ways that you could spend your time. And all of these things are good in and of themselves, but if you're going to build relationships with your neighbors, then you have to evaluate how you're investing your time across all these various areas of your life. And you've got to be able to determine how much you can give to this one. So this is one area where you want to be able to love people and serve people. So of all the areas where you're called to love and serve people, and in all the capacities in which you're loving and serving people, how much time can you give to those who live closest to you? So I would encourage you to just to sit down with your spouse or with a trusted friend and just talk through, like, how much time can I give to this? You know, the same way that you have a budget for your finances, it's the same concept. I mean, you've got a limited amount of financial resources. You have to budget it and allocate wisely where different funds are going to go to different things, and we have to do the same thing with our time. But sit down and evaluate it, think about it, decide for you, and it's going to look different for all of us, but how much time can you give to building relationships with those people in your neighborhood? And then determine what that is, and then block it off and do it. Maybe it's one night a week. Yes, Ben.
One thing that's been super helpful for us. Can you say something?
Yes, please. We got to get the mic.
One thing that's been super helpful for us is it's just simple, is we're outside.
Mm.
And it helps that we have children.
Yeah.
But we turn the TV off and we're outside, and Ashley may be gardening, I may be mowing, but we're outside and we see our neighbors, we stop and we talk to them, and that's been really helpful just to get to know them a lot better.
Yep.
We go a lot further with it, but just being outside.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, and that you could actually make that number 8 on this list, because honestly, I think we've talked about it the first couple of weeks, but just culturally, one of the reasons why neighboring is such a challenge is because of the fact that culturally, what we do now, everybody does this, is you pull into your garage, the garage door goes up, you pull in, the garage door goes down, and then if you are outside, you're in your backyard, your fenced-in backyard, and that's where everybody is. So a very practical way that you can engage your neighbors is go in your front yard instead of your backyard. Now, you got a low fence, so you could actually probably still see your neighbors. Yeah, there you go. But yeah, that's a great practical way to just, you know, and for us, that's a big challenge because we've talked about it a million times of our frustration in that we don't have a front yard, essentially. It's really sloped. We kind of live on the side of a hill. So our driveway is really sloped and our front yard is about, you know, 10 square feet, and it's straight up and down. So we've talked about one of our priorities in our next house is going to be front yard accessibility so that we can be in our front yard, so that we can, you know, have a natural way to just connect with neighbors. Just block out the time, whatever it's going to be. Maybe it's one night a week that you're going to have people over. Yes. Oh, wait just a minute. Can we get a mic over here? Yes, we want this documented for the world to hear.
Similar to that is taking a walk in your neighborhood.
Yes.
Because often while we're walking in our neighborhood, that's when we can meet, because they're in their yard sometimes, or they're getting out of their car or getting their mail, so that's when we get to talk to our neighbors.
Yeah, that's great. I love it. Thank you. Okay, we'll keep moving. Number six is similar to time, but it's margin, investing in margin. So having margin in your life means that you have flexibility. So it's like time, but it's nuanced. Okay? So in order to build relationships with your neighbors, you need to have a measure of margin built into your life and your schedule, because you can't plan out every interaction in advance of what you're going to, of being able to love your neighbors. If you do that, you're probably not going to be able to love them very well, and they're probably going to get frustrated at the fact that they see you as being too important to be able to get into your schedule. You know what I mean? So it's great to plan out, like, hey, we're going to take a walk every morning, and that'll be on the schedule, and that'll be on the calendar. We're going to have friends from our neighborhood over for dinner on every Tuesday night. And it's great to have those things on the calendar. But what about when just things happen? You know, what if your neighbor needs emergency childcare? Or what if your neighbor has a flood in their house and they need your help? Or maybe you just see them outside and they want to talk for 30 minutes. All these things require margin. You've got to have the flexibility to be able to do those things. Because if you're running on little to no margin, there's no time left over for a 30-minute conversation outside with Bill from across the street. And there's just not. And there's certainly not time for other kind of emergency things that might come up. So the way that you are able to invest in margin is really going to vary quite a bit depending on your situation. So for some of us, I think it would probably be wise to loosen up your schedule a little bit, however you're able to do that, and build in some more flexibility into your life and your schedule. For other people, maybe you've already got quite a bit of margin. I mean, there's advantages to people who work for themselves. You know, they have a lot to do, but there's not a set time of when they have to do that. People that are retired, people that are students, things like that. A lot of benefits to some of those stages of life is flexibility, margin. You might be busy, but you're not bound to a certain schedule of when you have to do things. So if you are somebody that has margin, leverage that with your neighbors. You know, think about the fact that, hey, I'm a stay-at-home mom and my kids are in school, and, you know, not that I'm sitting around doing nothing, but, you know, I can use that opportunity to serve my neighbors. Yes, Ashley.
One of the things that Ben and I have realized lately is the opportunity we have to be flexible with our kids and them inviting friends over. Mm. So the margin for us has been, you know, whereas we think, I'm exhausted, I don't really want to have a house full of, you know, kids. And, you know, whenever you have four and they all invite a friend, it can get really big really fast.
Yeah.
So one of the things that Ben and I have just recently decided that we would be more flexible on is having fewer limitations and barriers for the kids to have friends over. Because that's a great opportunity for us to minister to our community.
Yeah, that's good.
We told our kids that, and they went crazy. And then we had to all of a sudden reel it in and say, okay, never mind.
Yeah. No more margin. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's helpful. So do the best you can with margin. You know, there's seasons for everything. Maybe you're in a season of life where you don't have a ton of margin, and you just accept that that's where you are right now, and you do the best that you can. But if you are someone who finds yourself with some flexibility, use that. Take advantage of that in your neighborhood. And final tip on building relationships with neighbors at the individual level, number seven, is receive their love. Now, what do we mean by that? Receive their love. It's something that I think can easily get overlooked as we're busy trying to show love to our neighbors. But also just receiving love from our neighbors can be something that we, depending on our personality or our situation, maybe we need to be intentional about that. I mean, to some degree, the relationships that you're building with your neighbors should be a two-way street. So Christians are the ones who recognize our need before God, and we gratefully accept his gift of salvation. So shouldn't we also be the ones who are humble enough to accept help from our neighbors? I mean, just think about if some of your relationships with your neighbors are strictly a one-way street. And think about why that is. Maybe it's because they just don't want to help. You know, it could be that. And there are those kinds of people where it just kind of becomes one way because you're bearing most of the burden and they're comfortable with that. But also think about if there's anything that you can do to lower the barrier that maybe you have of accepting their help. So, you know, let your neighbor pay for lunch. Or when you're out of town, ask them to pick up your mail. Let them help you carry something in if they offer. I think it's helpful to remember that the art of receiving can be a powerful tool for building friendships with people who live nearby because it makes them feel valued when they're able to help you and serve you and they're not just always feeling like a freeloader because they're on the receiving end of everything in the relationship. Okay, so that's seven ideas for building friendships with your neighbors. And I hope at least one or two of those got you thinking, and we had some great input as well. Yes? Oh, yeah, we got to get the microphone. I'm sorry.
Get to know their pets and be willing to serve them.
Yeah.
If they're out of town or something like that.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, people are really serious about their pets. And so a way to love them is to love what's important to them. So that's good.
I've got one thing real quick.
Yes.
On the idea of receiving.
Uh-huh.
Our pride gets in the way of that.
Totally.
So when our neighbor literally says, if there's anything you need, let me know. And we're like, okay, thank you. And then in our minds, we're like, never.
Never.
Never would I ever yeah. let you help me.
Yeah.
I have it all together, you know. And, you know, we have a neighbor across the street who told me that, and I'm very reluctant. You know, to even, but I should be willing to go across the street and say, hey, man, even if it would be more of a convenience just to have a point of contact with
yeah,
them, to
right.
ask for something, to get over myself
yep.
and say, this is more about, you know, our relationship than it is about, you know, me being able to do everything myself with my own hands and pull myself up by my own bootstraps
yep.
kind of thing. So,
totally. Yes, that's great. We got one down here. This is good stuff. Thank you guys for sharing.
We live in a neighborhood where we do a lot of helping with pets. We're just another UBC family that that is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just really grateful for that phone call that Rhonda will just say, you know, I need something. I don't have it in my kitchen. Could I get it? It's a great feeling.
It's
a great feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think of what Jesus did with the woman at the well.
That's it.
He asked for that cup of cold water.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. That's good. Okay. Number four, building neighborhoods. So we're going to move now from the individual level to more of a structural level. And for some of you, you might already be doing this in your job. Maybe you're an architect or a builder. Maybe you're on the city planning commission or some other form of local government who's working to help improve your community. But most of us don't have jobs that address structural problems at the local level of a neighborhood. And we talked about at the beginning of class why this is an important aspect of being a good neighbor, because it's a way that we image God And it's a way that we show off his greatness by helping bring order to our little piece of the world. So then, there's three questions here that we've got. Who should be involved in loving your neighborhood? How should they do it? And what should they do? So the first question is who? Who should be involved in loving neighborhoods at a more structural level? Well, the short answer, I think, is Christians. Christians should be doing that. I mean, who is it that should love, of all people, who should love without asking what's in it for me? Those who have been loved by Christ, right? 1 John 4:19 says, we love because he first loved us. And because our love is generated by his love, we shouldn't require any kind of self-interest in our motivation for loving our, not just our neighbors, but our neighborhoods as well. The love doesn't ask, what's in it for me, but how can I respond to the love Christ has shown me? So, and beyond that, we recognize that there's value in even just attempting structural change, even when we fail, because just attempting to do something that is loving shows off God and his love at work within us. So, we as Christians should be able to take risks in loving others because those actions are valuable even if they fail to affect the change that we're trying to bring about, since they're part of showing off the excellence of God. So who should be involved in these things? We should. Christians should. Those who have been shown the love of Christ. How do we do it? Let me give you four guidelines from Scripture that I think are going to help us think about loving our neighborhoods. The first one is submitting to authority. We should do this by submitting to authority. 1 Peter 2:13 says, be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution. And that's repeated in a lot of the epistles in the New Testament. So I think that means that in general, we should work through the system. Right, in any kind of change that we're trying to bring about, we need to be working within the system, not being troublemakers who are trying to throw off the system. I mean, there might be exceptions to that, but I think in general, we should submit to earthly authority because it reflects God's authority. And even when that authority is being misused, it's still in some way points to God and to his authority. So we want to be submissive and work within the system that we're in order to bring about change. Second is love your neighbor. Well, that might sound redundant. But I think sometimes in trying to pursue structural change, some of us might forget the people that we're trying to love. In order to do that, we kind of maybe lose sight. We get so focused on a project or a cause that we lose sight of the people who are involved along the way. So loving your neighborhood should not come at the expense of loving your neighbor. Remember, our ultimate goal is to see our neighbors come to Christ. So don't let your attempts for structural change in your neighborhood compromise or complicate your ability to engage them with the gospel. Number three is be humble. And especially as we get into loving the neighborhood in a structural way, it's important to recognize that for many of the challenges that we might face, there's no standard, objective Christian answer. Okay, so in attempting to affect change in your neighborhood, don't let your eagerness to do good lead to disunity in your community or even in the church. You might have a passion to see some change come about in your community, and you might get frustrated that others in your community or others in the church aren't jumping on board with you the same way that you are. But leave room for the fact that everybody doesn't have the same level of passion for every issue. So maybe they want to see it changed, but they disagree with how you want to go about it. Or maybe it's just not as much of a priority to them as it is to you. Or maybe they'll come around later as they mature and grow. But whatever it is, we have to be patient with others. We have to be humble, knowing that our way is not the only way and might not even necessarily be the right way. So it's great to work toward positive change in your neighborhood, but just don't let that become a stumbling block to the people around you. And then fourth is put your hope in heaven. Put your hope in heaven.